This is the First Time Podcast.
Part reality series.
Part writer's masterclass. It's a podcast about the first time
you publish a book.
I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collette. Welcome to The First Time.
Hello, Catherine.
Hi.
How are you going?
Good. I was just looking at, we were trying to set up our recording software. So I was in the recording software and it always records in an MP4 file. So I just had this whole catalogue of images of us. And it's always you looking great in your beautiful studio and me side on to the camera. So you'll notice I've moved my camera.
I see that. Do you know what I did enjoy? I did enjoy, for those of you who listen to us in your ears and also look at us on the socials, on the Instagram, we chose a quite amusing photo from last week's recording of Catherine just looking at me like, what are you doing? Will you make the noise stop? Like, you fool.
I think I could pinpoint that exact moment because this was during our very failed Instagram Live. And we could only see that we had two people that were watching and one was Natasha Lester. And that's the point at which I freaked out and like hit exit and just abandoned you to the
And Natasha, if you're listening, it's because you always look so completely delightful and, you know, at peace with what you're doing in your videos. Amazing.
Natasha Lester could wear white any day of the week.
She could actually. I wonder how old her children are. Surely at some stage she got a big bolognese handprint or like avocado on black jeans is actually the worst thing, I think.
Hard to remove.
Yeah. Anyway, it's great to be back. It was really fun releasing our episodes last week, although we are sitting here, great numbers, got lots of you listening. Haven't heard much from you. It's only been 2 days. We get that. But if you'd just like to let us know. I don't know. Were you enjoying it? We heard a few people like, I'm listening. This is great. You're back. But since then, crickets. So we don't know if we did something wrong.
They're so needy.
That's why people do podcasts, right?
Yeah.
Because needy.
Yeah. Did you have a blog was a bit of a similar experience? We'll move on. Okay. So the topic for today is first drafts.
First drafts. Tell me, Catherine, are you in the middle of a first draft?
I am. Are first drafts always awful, do you think? Do you think they're the hardest words of all words?
No, I do not.
Really?
Yes. Do you think they are?
I think that to the degree I think no one would ever disagree.
No, I disagree. But I do a fast and dirty draft. Like, don't you go back and read over what you've done. I do not do that.
Not this time. This time I'm moving forward. So if I make a change, like even if I jump, or maybe I should set it in the 50s.
Yeah.
I'll write that day in the 50s. And if I change my mind again, I'll just hop to.
That is the way to go. Let me ask you, what is your word count right now?
It's around 11,000 words of 40. Yeah.
That is the hard yards. Like I reckon once you hit 20, even more so once you hit 30, there's no going back. Like then it's a bit steamrollery more. You push forward. It's a bad metaphor, but you just keep going and then you've got a novel.
People then. You've got enough kind of, yeah, I agree with that. How many words are you on?
I'm on 56,000.
God.
But
56,000.
I have up in front of me, like, I'll show you, I'll pull them off my. So I lost the 30, but I had like ones to say, okay, we're aiming for 40. And then I put the next one on top, okay, we're aiming for 50.
Post-its that say 40, 50K.
Yeah. Yeah, I am. And also a big sign that says forward, finish! Exclamation mark.
Wow, that's great.
That was from one of the excellent folks in one of the word caves with Sarah Centillis. And this idea of just pushing forward, which I think you get from those word caves, like just get the words down. You cannot work with empty pages is what I
must realize. It's a similar message from my good friend Alan Watt of the 90 Day novel. He is just get to the end. Don't. Zhuzh, don't.
Yeah.
just get to the end.
Just get to the end. And also, do you do that thing of, I do like placeholder text in my head. I'm like, these are not the words. This is the action, or this is what's happening, or this is the character, but I will make these words beautiful. And sometimes I don't, you know,
I do that a lot. I do that a lot for description in particular. Like, boring.
So hang on. Just so you don't want to write the description. You think you have to. So you put in some like, blah, blah, this is going to be description. And then you go back and fill it with words that excite you, or you're still not feeling the description?
I think I am reading more about description. Maybe I never really understood the value of description. I can't remember whose book it is. Maybe I have posted about it before. It's a book on active setting. And so it's each chapter looks at the role of setting, but one is like setting and mood. One is setting and reveal of character. One is, and so it, and it looks, it is very description based, but it really opened up my eyes to, I think I did a lot of like, there were three chairs in the room. One was a hard-backed chair and, you know, she walked past it, putting her hand on the soft-backed chair, or, you know, just things that were inherently uninteresting and very literal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, if it doesn't excite you while you're writing it, no. It's
and so bow. To the point of, I think good description is not even necessarily that visual in some ways. Like, well, this was like, I like this idea of, you know, what is a reveal of character, or what is a reveal of, yeah, I think that, yeah. Yeah. Do you have something that you tend to placehold?
Transitions. I placehold transitions. So, but increasingly, I reckon I did it more in The Mother Fault and even more so in this one. I'm not even placeholding them. I'm just like going, no, there's no transition and I don't even want to put it in. I feel more confident now, whereas before I thought, oh, you had to have that, the bit of text that is what happened the day between that thing happening and this thing happening, or, you know, all those kinds of things, or and or movement.
Yeah,
getting out of the bed and into the kitchen and those kinds of things. Now I just leave them out. I'm getting better at that. That is a skill development thing that I think all writers do. Like, that's a young writer or an emerging writer kind of thing to get stuck on the transitions, I reckon.
Well, like particularly at the start, this thing you can kind of
put
your pants on and then drinks.
I do also. I've got a lot of gaps for research. So this time, especially because it's back to historical fiction and it's based on real events, I've got a lot of, TBC, XXX, just come back to this. Because if I start looking, we've talked about this before, everyone knows this, if you start looking, you stop writing. You may get the correct piece of information that you need, but you are not getting the words down. So write first, research later.
So tell me this book, we don't have to go into the actual content.
Yep.
You had an idea which was based on something that was true that you had read in a newspaper article. Is that true?
Yeah.
Where do you then begin?
Yes. Well, I then begin with the journal document, which, you know, so the first thing is to
do. I've done that.
Yeah. So the first thing is, I've got this idea, journal document, blah, 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 blah. And then I actually went back to see where the actual draft started. I'm very bad at version control, as you well know, so it took me a while to work this out. But what I realized, I reckon I must have been teaching at the time, teaching young writers. And one of the things that I give, one of the activities that I do with young writers is to put a character at a high vantage point at the start of a story, you know, in the first scene. High, physically high, to give a sense of the layout, particularly when they're doing historical fiction, to give a sense of the place and the setting. And so, you know.
How interesting.
Kid in a tree, up a mountain, at the top of the town, on the water tank, whatever, giving a sense of the town. And so I reckon I did that because I've got my character. It's no longer the start, but the first thing that I wrote was, you know, my character at the top floor of the factory that she's in, looking at and describing the kind of factory in the suburb that she can see around her. So that was interesting. That's because who knows where to start? You just pluck somewhere, right, and jump in. But the journal document is going concurrently with that.
Alan Watt is a very big fan of the 90-day novel.
I tell you what, how many do you reckon we've sold? Well, you've sold.
It is so good. I think maybe people could email us if they buy
Ellen. Let us know if you start doing the 90-day novel and if you feel as passionately as Catherine does, or if you perhaps don't feel as passionately, let us know how you're going with it. So what does Ellen say?
So he is, first 4 weeks of writing is all writing exercises. So exactly the type of thing that you're saying. Mm. He'll give you 6 exercises and then there's hundreds more in the back of the book and a lot of it is stream of consciousness. It's a really great, like, it's the perfect beginning.
Well, to jump in, I've got this little jar. I've used it to prop something up so I can't reach it. But I've got a little, like, an old sugar jar that I just have written down a bunch of writing exercises that I've got from different people and printed them out and cut them up and put them in the sugar jar so that if I am completely stuck or need to warm up or whatever, I just set my timer for 7 minutes and I pull one out and I go. And so then you're warmed up, you know, like then, and mostly I make it about somehow I work it into some aspect of the manuscript. Like I'm not doing random stuff, but yeah, it works. I collect them.
That's really good. Do you think about what your characters look like?
No.
Okay. Really?
It just came out. No, but you know how some people do photo fits and stuff like that? Like I say that up in front of me. On my pin board, I've got lots of photos of real workers from the factory I'm writing about. I've got a lot of pictures of Marlon Brando and I've got a lot of pictures of, the guy from Peaky Blinders. So they're not because my character looks like him, but they're the vibe, you know, they're the vibe of him. But no, I don't. So much so that often I will have to go back and go, oh, they had blonde hair here and they have another kind of hair here. What do you do? Do you have pictures?
Them either. Same sort of thing.
Yeah.
What color hair? No one has green eyes either. Yeah. No.
I think defining features, like sometimes you're like, oh, yeah, you know.
Height or
boobs or, you know, like if they've got a specific thing that they're hung up about or that kind of thing. Those specifics, yes, but not as a comprehensive whole body. If my characters were walking down the street, I don't know that I'd recognize them. There you go.
How do you come up with names?
Oh my gosh. Can you describe what I'm holding up to you right now?
Oh God.
It is.
It's holding a woman's weekly insert. It looks like that's 1,500 names and their meanings.
Yeah.
Odd enough, but it looks like it dates from the
November 8, 1972.
Oh, amazing.
Mm-hmm. So a friend was, her mum was chucking stuff out and I was like, and she was describing this to me and I said, do not throw that out. That is really, really useful. You know that both of our names mean pure, don't you?
Yeah.
Kate and Catherine, pure. I mean, that's how, maybe that should be our new podcast. We were just talking about making a podcast network. We could just have one called Pure. Sorry, I got sidetracked there. Names, really difficult. Names are tricky, aren't they?
Name generators.
Oh.
Which you can also input like an era, like what year they were born, that sort of stuff. I've heard of people doing like local street names as a way of doing
certain. Did you have trouble naming your children?
Tilly was unnamed for 3 weeks.
Ooh.
So a lot of trouble. Yeah, I had lots of great ideas. Carney was
no, well, Carney's a teacher. Exactly the same with me because you've taught.
And he has an unusual name. So anything faintly unusual was off the table. But teaching is a burden for naming
children. Teaching is a burden.
Did you name your girls easily?
Yeah, we knew them ahead of time. I just find, I have to break out of kind of stereotypes. You know, like all my spunky characters are always Jack. I've got a Jack in this one. Like, you know, it's spunky. It's just I've always liked Jacks. No one specific out there. No one specific.
Okay. So serious question.
Yes.
Do you like writing sex scenes?
I do.
Where do you start? Because I read an erotic fiction book and I'm going to match. I'll tell you what the erotic fiction book said, actually.
Hang on. Was it you read erotic fiction or a book about how to write erotic fiction.
Yes, I'll clarify. So it was from the library. It was a book about how to write.
You can get erotic fiction from the library though, Catherine, just in case you want that too.
That would have been a smarter avenue because the book I read, I didn't read a lot of the book, but the method within the book was to make lists, which sort of appealed to me on some level, but lists of like nouns that you find sexual. So things like nipple or, I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know. Think of another.
Mango?
Like, mango, maybe.
Big, you know, yeah, fruit, something. Yeah, yeah. Kind
of. And then lists of verbs that you find sexual. Nibble. And so then.
Where are you going with this?
This, and then you kind of marry the two.
That is not what I do. But, you know, all power to the people who do. Do it that way if that works for you. That has not been my strategy so far. I put it out on Twitter the other night that I wished that I could write my whole draft as fast as I write the sex scenes because I write them bloody fast. And I mean, there's some kind of obvious reasons there. You want to get to the action as per when you're reading them. I don't punctuate them or anything like that when I'm writing them, or, you know, punctuate the dialogue or anything like that, which means they're very, very messy. But I feel like in that way, because you're writing fast, someone on Twitter said, oh, I skip them. I skip sex scenes because they're generally terrible. And unless something is, driving the narrative or characters, revealing something about narrative or characters, I'm not interested. And I'm like, yeah, but isn't that what a good sex scene does? Like, it does reveal you're very vulnerable. Your characters are very vulnerable generally in a sex scene. So you are always, I find, they're very revealing of character. So I reckon to get that kind of, that's how I do it. I do it super, super fast. I used to hold off writing the climax. I tell you what, if psychologists are listening to this, they could have a field day with us. But I used to hold off because I thought that it would actually make my writing better. Like, I would be engaged in the writing for longer because I'm like, I'm also waiting to get to the climax of this scene. But I don't do that anymore because you can't wait forever.
I don't know how Freudian.
It's really Freudian. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if that is useful in any way. I would recommend that.
Writing fast is useful.
Writing fast is useful, and I would recommend reading good erotic fiction or just good sex scenes, and I would say Chrissy Neans, who we have spoken to, and we've spoken to her about writing sex as well in last season.
She did a workshop on that, didn't she?
Yes, she did. I missed that. And also Claire Christian in Noni Blake. They're just great sex scenes. I would highly recommend people go out and read them.
Nice.
And I look forward to reading your sex scene, which involves nibbling nipples and other verbs and nouns aligned.
It's like a paint by numbers, isn't it? Like
paint by numbers, yeah.
I'm not sure if it will really work. Okay, creativity in general, there's reading, there's writing, there's listening.
Mm-hmm.
What else do you do? Are you into music?
I don't listen to music when I'm writing. It's very distracting. I do like a good dance in the morning to a bit of Just Dance on the Nintendo with the girls. Gets me fired up for the morning. And, you know, actually sometimes I will listen to music before I start to write if it's very specific to what I'm about to write. But otherwise, silence is gold.
The soothing sound of a text message.
What about you? Can you listen to music while you write?
No, I would never listen to music while I write. I don't. I could do a big rant about playlists. You know, a lot of people include their playlists in books. I would never, ever.
Not happy with that. You never listen to the playlists.
I would. Other people. To me, that is just. It's like if someone. It's one of those things that I think either deeply resonates with someone,
yes,
or is just doesn't at all.
For our listeners, Catherine's face.
The playlist, like the author and author including the playlist in the book, is like it's worth something to them, but it's not. It doesn't. I don't think it translates. It's not a screenplay.
Catherine's face is very blank and filled with disdain right now. Just,
yeah, I don't know why I'm so disdainful. I did have one thing I was going to mention when we talked about description. Have you read Where the Crawdads, what is it, Where the Crawdads Lie?
I have not, and I refuse to.
To me, that is the most yawny description. It is just, it is like, I don't know how it's done so well. It's
the highest selling book of all time or something.
It got Dimmick's number one. You know how they do that top 100?
Like, I think it's forever. I saw an article about it.
It's like long-winded descriptions of trees and marshes jammed in with a romance novel with a very small, thin, beautiful protagonist who doesn't know that she's small and thin and beautiful and also clever. Like, it just is.
And there is Catherine's Goodread review of the year.
Yeah, I'm mystified by it. I really wish you had read it and we could discuss it at length.
There's not enough time. I'm afraid that I do not have enough time to read the books that I know I'm just going to be cross about because they've sold hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of copies. So sorry, Where the Crawdads Lie, and sorry to all of you out there who adore it. Not a fan here in Catherine. At the first time.
I feel like you should read it. Maybe you will like it.
Okay. Maybe we should do a breakaway podcast on reading, hate reading. Hate reading is definitely a thing though.
Reading.
Yeah.
Then I think the way that I think about that though is good to get a reaction from a book. Like, I finished it. It was not a do not finish.
It wasn't a do not finish.
I think that's like, there's something in that.
There is definitely something in it.
The thing I was going to mention is, improv. It's so good.
Okay, you had your first session. Tell us what happened.
Like, good. It's very liberating. It's very hard. You have to be really in the moment. It's very game-based. So you do lots of, like, it's very non-threatening. So you do lots of exercises. One, for example, is you mime handing someone something and saying, I got this for you. And then they have to say, oh, it's a...
Oh, I love that. Theatre sports games. We were playing these camping last week. Love it. Sports.
And then the first person has to say, I got it for you because. It was great. They also have this nice thing where if you go badly or you feel like you've done badly at any point, you say, I failed, and do a big bow and everybody claps you.
I love that. You know, I think that there's some really... Because I did a lot of improv when I was at school in the drama department, and I have carried with me so many of the lessons, and that lesson where you can't block, like where you have to accept.
That's the other one. Yes. Brilliant. Is that what you mean?
Yes and. Yeah, exactly. And
that's right. So whatever someone offers you in a scene, you accept it as reality.
And I think that's great. And it's very good for creativity. And it's very good for when you think about writing fiction as well. Go with it. Go with the random thing that's in the story.
And tune into first response, I think, as
yes.
well.
Yes, yes, great. Yes, yes, yes.
Like, very easy to, yeah.
Well, that's so fun. So obviously that means you're going back for the second session.
Well, third.
Third. And oh my goodness.
It's really good. It's the first time though there's a spread of people in the room, people in their 20s, right up to people in their 60s maybe. Carney was like, you say that, but what's the mix? I'm like, well, most, you know, people of my sort of age. It wasn't until I saw a group of the 20-year-olds gathering and swapping numbers that they did not ask for my number. And I realized I'm at the older end.
Oh, Catherine. Did you just go up and barge your way in and say, hey, guys, I want to come to the pub too?
Of, like, being old, like being disregarded from the group on the basis of age. Like, I've been disregarded from groups on the basis of personality before. But and I'm not overthinking it. It really was that moment. It was a glimpse into the future as a female, I reckon.
When you start to feel invisible.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Wow. Well, I want to talk to them when I come to see your performance. Maybe you should do that next week. Offer it up, ageism, as a topic.
As a topic. It was such a weird moment. Like, it was very profound for me. I keep thinking about it.
Write it into your book. Go on, do it. That's what I do with profound moments.
All right. Let's go final question. how much of the first draft of your novel will be in the last, do you think?
Oh, do you mean like words in their current order or?
I will take words in their current order or just essence of scenes or essence of story.
This one, I'm going to go out on a limb here, Catherine, and say this one I think will have a much higher percentage than The Mother Fault. I feel like last time I wrote a lot and I wrote in a bunch of different directions because spec fic, you can do whatever the hell you want, whereas there are more kind of practical and logistical limitations on what I can write for this manuscript because it is historical fiction, whatever, it's following a timeline, it's set over, you know, a particular period of time. So I'm going to say 60%.
Wow, that's good. That's
but
really-
like, and then has to be
in
essence. I'd like to think that there are some paragraphs that might just, you know, that I've been really happy with that have come out as kind of a hit that would stay in there in their entirety. What about you?
What would I say? Yeah, maybe 50.
Okay.
I think this story will have the same essence.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Maybe like 60. That's true. On that, spec fiction versus historical, what would you go back to spec fic or will you always, or never say never, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. No, I want to do just, you know, fully, I listened to a great interview. I listened to basically every interview with George Saunders because I'm such a groupie. And Claire Nichols did a fantastic one for the book show last week. And he was talking about, the randomness kind of his body of work really and the different things he's done, but that very early on he used to think about his entire body of work and what he wanted it to be, and it was kind of paralyzing. And so then he just decided that he would go into the essence of what each project was. And I think that historical fiction is exciting to me because it's different again this time around, and I'm really like yesterday I spent in a historical society, looking through old newspapers, and I was like, I was happy as a pig in shit. You know, it's just, it's my very happy place. I took 1,000 photos. I was invigorated. I came home and wrote. I Googled late into the night. I was super, super hyped up on the stuff that I'd been doing. But, you know, when, please, universe, the next idea comes, I don't care what it is. I will do it because they don't come around often for me. Are you going to start writing historical fiction, Catherine? You did mention the 50s earlier.
I'm feeling on the fence about it. I think the issue is I like aspects of the present, and then I like bits of both. So I could make a fake past.
Oh,
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I'm unconvinced. I keep flicking back and forth. We'll see.
I will. I look forward to seeing where you decide. We did attempt an Instagram Live. It was hilarious. It was a test run. It was meant to be a test run. We didn't actually think anyone would watch. You know, lots of things went wrong. We're going to do one next week because I am going away. I'm going away to write. I have high hopes of how much I'm going to get done.
So where is this retreat? How do we – are you going to keep it to yourself? You've done this retreat before.
I have done – this is a retreat that is via the wonderful folk at RMIT University at Butterfly House, which was – can you believe someone is this good? Clearly not in the current government. They just gifted. They gifted their house to be used as a writing retreat, which is what Verona is as well. Like it's just – anyway, I'm going there.
Is it like a daytime thing or is it like a – are you sleeping there?
I'm sleeping there. I'm looking out at the waves. I'm sleeping there. And this time, really specifically, I'm not going to take heaps of the research and I'm not going to take a bunch of books. I'm going to really try and, you know, bum glue and get the words down right to the end of the draft. So I'm hoping I'm going to take like really boring the same food. I'm not going to take alcohol. I just said that aloud. So now that has to mean something. I think I won't take alcohol, but I will take my coffee machine.
Oh, yeah. You did a juice cleanse on a different retreat.
Yes, I did do a juice cleanse.
Virtuous. You were like.
Yeah. I mean, you can't be too virtuous, can you? That was only 3 days. Like, this is 7. I couldn't juice cleanse for 7 because then I'd start hallucinating and the draft would be worth nothing. But I want you to check in on me.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to do. Instagram Live. We will put it out on the socials what night it's going to be. And you can join us and you can ask me if I've indeed been virtuous and got to the end of my word count, or if I have just laid about on the bed, embracing the fact that I don't have children or a partner and I am completely on my own and just, I don't know, watching Netflix.
That sounds so good.
I know, don't stop.
You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at @thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. We record this podcast virtually on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past and present, and we extend that to our First Nations guests and listeners. Sound production by Phoebe 80, who we can employ because of the wonderful support of our patrons via Patreon. Thank you so much for making this podcast possible.